Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome to One Bills Live. I'm Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We're here on a cold, rainy kind of snowy day in Orchard Park, New York at One Bills Drive. Brownie, how you doing? Did you have a good evening last night?
It was good.
Did you get a little nap after our back-breaking show yesterday?
I was fine.
Grindstone.
I was fighting off a little bit of a head cold, and some soup helped last night, so that was good. Because I feel better today. I thought my head was in a vice last night. You know, your sinuses start tightening up on you, and it feels like your head's in a vice, and you can't do anything about it. But a couple of Excedrin and getting to bed early, I'm okay today. I'm ready to roll. So,
unlike our erstwhile producer Jay Harris,
poor Jay.
He's out sick today. So,
well, he probably made the mistake of coming in yesterday.
The indomitable
and only wore himself.
Kelly Rude is in the control.
That's right.
Today.
And only wore himself down more.
Right.
Tried to come in, and then
he was a wreck.
He had to get the hook.
Listeners know you get this coworker who comes in, and you know, bro, you really shouldn't be here. Just go home.
He looked like death warmed up. Oh, right? I didn't know if he was going to make it. He comes in, and he's talking to me. I go, "Do you want to sit down?"
Yeah, I came in and saw one of the guys, George Bloss, another production assistant. He goes, "Yeah, wait till you see Jay." I go, "Wait." So I walk in. Yeah.
It looked like he just came out of a UFC fight.
I was like, "Ah!" What?
Eyes are all puffy.
Oh, what happened to you?
Yeah. He had to go home. He did.
He has cleared the premises, so we are on just us today. So we can, we can do whatever we want today if the guy's gone, right? We're all on our own. But anyway, Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown, we're here today until 3. John Murphy, if you weren't here with us yesterday, he's all week at the Reese's Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama. We're going to hear from him, 15 minutes or so, 18 minutes or so, 20 after the hour. He's going to have a one-on-one interview with Bills GM Brandon Bean. We also have Andrew Brandt on today. He has an article out about how he thinks maybe the league could have more in technology incorporated into their review process and their officiating process. He's got some thoughts on that.
To avoid what we saw last weekend.
To avoid what we saw last weekend, which everybody's still talking about. Also, we're going to get Heath. We got a chance to get Heath Farwell on today. We may hold that off until tomorrow. He's going to have a scrum today where all the media are going to be around. We may carry that live.
New special teams coach.
The new special teams coach, exactly. And then we might get a one-on-one with him as the week progresses. Might get him as a one-on-one tomorrow, or maybe, we'll get the scrum today. That's the plan. So we've got a lot to talk about, the Super Bowl matchup. We also have a Twitter poll that all of you can chime in on, and it has had to do with still the aftermath of the weekend's championship round where both games went into overtime and the Rams prevailing over the Saints and the Patriots prevailing over the Chiefs. The Rams getting the opportunity to go to overtime because of an enormously egregious, what everybody thinks is egregious, non-call by the officials. So with that controversy behind us, we're revisiting it today. With all the controversy surrounding the championship Sunday, what's the thing the NFL should address? That's our Twitter poll for today. You can tweet at us or call us at 1-888-552-550 or 803-550 for people in the Buffalo area. What's the first thing the NFL should address? Is it 1, expandable, reviewable plays? Number 2, better use of technology? 3, overtime rules or something else, other. 42% of you say change the overtime rules. This is the one thing that I kind of don't get, but hey, if you guys think that's what we need to do, I get it. 31% of you say expand reviewable plays. 16% of you say let's use some better technology to get a better handle on what's going on out there, and 11% have something else in mind. You can tweet at us at OneBillsLive or at SteveTasker89, or you can just call us at 803-0550. So, off the top of your head, Brownie, you've been thinking about this. What do you think? What's your call? Do you agree with the majority there? 43% say they need to change the overtime rules?
I'm all about the technology. I think, and we'll talk to Andrew Brandt about this in the 1 o'clock hour. It's the main reason we're having him on, because he wrote a piece for MMQB outlining his reasons for why he feels that the NFL has to take a major step forward in improving the use of technology. Right. In replay review, and I couldn't agree more. I'm a big soccer guy. Right. I mean, I think that's somewhat known. And I watch a lot of European soccer. NBCSN airs a lot of it in the English Premier League. And even MLS in the States.
What do they do?
They have what's called VAR, video assisted replay. And they have goal line technology for a ball that, you know, the rule is the whole ball has to be over the line to be a goal. And they can review it in seconds and radio down to the official on the field and buzz him to tell him, yes, that was a goal if play happened to keep going, and let him know, yay or nay, that was a goal. I mean, we're talking like a 3-second
Okay, but do they put 3 seconds back on the game clock for that then?
No, they would add it as stoppage time if there was enough time that the game was halted.
So they would add it.
They would add it on the back end.
They wouldn't go back and reset the clock.
No, but there's other things that they review, straight red cards. You know, if there's a fight of some kind and they don't feel, you know, people upstairs or people watching the video review do not feel as though the right person was red carded, they can radio down to the official and say, you got the wrong guy, mistaken identity, change it, it's this guy. And our MSG viewers are watching the goal line technology that exists right now in professional soccer. So very quickly, you know, quick answers, not going to a tablet, reviewing this, reviewing that. I mean, in seconds, the technology provides an answer to verify, confirm, or deny what the official called on the field. And I just think that the NFL is woefully behind in many areas. I know tennis, professional tennis, which Andrew Brandt cites in his article, uses that to determine whether a ball is in or out, and they have the same kind of technology that soccer does. So you think about how the NFL uses replay, and I think they determine things such as, was the catch secured and tucked away? Is the ball moving? You know, there's other things that they review, but they don't review things like pass interference, which is why I think some fans are interested in expanding the plays that are reviewable, and I understand why. I think the NFL is reluctant to do that, though, with calls that are quote-unquote judgment calls like pass interference. But when it's so egregious, like that one was on Sunday,
it's a non-call.
You have to expand it.
That also takes you down a road, too, where you've got guys challenging things that didn't happen or weren't called. And then you have to get it opens up another can of worms. There's no end to this black hole that you can go into with review.
And then you know the league's also going to be concerned with games taking too long because you're reviewing everything.
They're keenly concerned with that. If you start being able to challenge non-calls, well, then you grow into another judgment call. Do you start saying, hey, if it's a penalty, it's a penalty, whether it affected the play or not? So, because you can have a quick pass to the right, guy goes out, gets a slant, plant pass, jumps into the end zone. But on the other side of the field, you've got a pick play running, and the offense makes a penalty, and it would have been pass interference had the ball gone there. Well, you can review that, and they say, hey, they had a penalty over here. So the touchdown comes off the board because the offense committed a penalty here or a hold here or what have you there on pass protection.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Maybe the easy way you can rule that out is say it's got to be a play that involves a ball. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a way around that one that you brought up there.
Listen, that opens up a whole can. But it does. You can see
you can get down the rabbit hole pretty fast.
Oh, rabbit hole goes fast. You turn into Alice in Wonderland really quick. But – that's the reason. And another thing, too, the National Football League, and I remember this happening when they said, listen, we're going to have a video review booth and a video official in every stadium on game day. They've got a communicator, a video referee, and the head referee and the crew, and then they're hooked in to New York in the command center in New York. And the league, I think smartly, said, listen, if we're going to review all these plays, we don't need 50 guys getting 50 different interpretations of the rules. We have one guy. For a long time, it was Dean Blandino, who did a fantastic job. Al Riveron is the guy who does it now. And they have one voice, so that if there's a play in San Diego, it will be called by the same set of eyes in Alberto Riveron. Al Riveron will call it, and he'll make the same call in San Diego as he will in Tampa Bay or New England or Green Bay. So you have one guy who interprets the rules and is the czar of the rules. So when those rulings are made, they're made consistently by the same guy. I ruled it this way. I'm going to rule this one this way as well. So you don't get any of that going around the league. And the league was pretty wise to do that. But they were very reticent in the beginning of all this process to take the game and the rulings out of the officials' hands that were actually on the field. But that ship has sailed. Am I right?
Probably.
If they're letting New York make the call, now they're having a conversation. Al Riveron in New York will have a conversation with Cleet Blakeman on the field in Kansas City or in New Orleans. He'll be sitting there talking to the head official. Will be talking to New York and say, "Here's what we're seeing, and here's what we got to remember." And they'll both be able to dialogue it and say, "Well, think about this." And they go, "Yeah, you're right. How about this?" And Dean Blandino had a great line about it when he was vice president. He said, "Listen, if we're sitting here trying to debate this, there is not clear and evident proof. It stands as called. You know, we don't have a definitive angle, and there's still a question. We can't debate it. It has to be definitive. We're letting the call stand. Or look at that. It's obvious he didn't touch it. We're gonna reverse the call." So all of that stuff is on the table, and that's our Twitter poll for today. You can chime in if you like. What's the first thing the NFL should address? Expand reviewable plays, better use of technology, overtime rules, or something else that you can think of. You can call us at 803-0550 or from 1-888-552-550.
Now, yesterday, we also heard from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean down at the Senior Bowl, and we'll be checking in with Murph a little bit later in the show here. Did you get a chance to listen to Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean in their entirety yesterday?
I did not.
Because I thought there was one big takeaway, at least from Coach McDermott's perspective. You know, obviously his coaching staff changes were front and center, and he was asked about that at length. And he was asked point blank, you know, what led to those changes at wide receiver, O-line coach, and special teams coach. And it might seem like an obvious question, but I think, you know, the media is after a defined answer, and Coach McDermott provided it. He said he wasn't necessarily, I'm going to quote him now, "I wasn't necessarily satisfied in those two areas, O-line, wide receiver. If I wake up with that feeling in my stomach that this is the right way to go for our organization, or conversely, if I wake up with the feeling that we can't get to where we're trying to get to with what we currently have at those spots," and that was the case as it related to offensive line and special teams. So he made changes at those two spots at the coaching level. Granted, there were changes over the course of the year at the player level.
And the wide receiver.
In terms of the lineup. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you think about the player that they jettisoned in Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, they didn't even like what they saw out of Robert Foster early in the year and cut him from the roster only to bring him back later in the year. And, of course, he blossomed late in the year, fortunately for him. But for Coach McDermott, who usually it doesn't give you a whole lot because I think he likes to keep things close to the vest. That's just the kind of coach that he is, and that's fine. I thought that was a very telling comment from him. He was basically admitting that he didn't feel those two parts of his football team were going to get to where he feels they need to go in their growth with the two coaches he had in place at those spots, and so that's why those changes were made, which may sound very obvious, but to get a coach to say, "Yeah, that's why I did it. We weren't getting what we needed there."
Yeah,
I think it was pretty obvious
they weren't. And the fact of the matter was, when the offensive line did seem to start playing better, it was because Josh Allen was a better athlete and got out of trouble.
Right.
Wide receivers, I heard all kinds of things. You know, Kelvin Benjamin set a bad tone in that room. I mean, the perception was that he wasn't working hard enough. There were times on the field when you'd see him shuffling around. It didn't seem to know exactly where he was supposed to line up.
Right.
There was all kinds of X's and O's issues about basic things you needed these guys to do. And Robert Foster said it point blank. He goes, "It was good for me when they cut me and then brought me back, made me earn my way back on, because it raised the level of my commitment. I didn't know." And which is typical.
Right.
You just don't know how to act as a pro. You've been on scholarship your whole life, right? You don't get cut. So these guys don't realize that it's a different world in the NFL. And as a young guy, they come up and they got to learn how hard you have to work, how much you have to apply yourself. And if you're going to be good, you've got to be dedicated.
And, you know, you look at the numbers for the second straight year, you know, the Bills were 31st in passing. Now, that was due to a myriad of reasons. The quarterback situation got a little muddled at the beginning of the year, ironed itself out once Josh got back from injury. But, you know, you were inserting quarterbacks who had all of 5 days of preparation, go play a game and be productive for us. I think that was an issue. And as you mentioned, the receiver position and the lack of production there, the lack of consistency there, the lack of proven talent there were all factors in why it was what it was. But, you know, here we are at the start of 2019, and they've got a receivers coach position to still fill, and they've got a young coach in Heath Farwell as a special teams coach, has never been a special teams coach in the league before, been an assistant
to a special team, never been the coordinator,
but he, you know, he's stepping into that role now, and Coach McDermott said yesterday, we did our homework on Heath. We believe this is a guy that can grow successfully into the position. He admits it's a risk, but he feels the trajectory of where Heath Farwell can go as a special teams coordinator in this league will ultimately benefit this team, you know, in 2019 and beyond.
Well, I mean, Sean McDermott's a great example of it. Old head coaches and old special teams coordinators, old coordinators of any kind, they got to start young.
They got to start somewhere.
They don't get old by starting out old, you know, and sometimes, someplace, they got their start and they have some success early in their careers. It leads to a long career. Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Rams.
And the offensive line coach for the Bills, Bobby Johnson, who was previously here under Joe DeAlessandris as an assistant offensive line coach. They say, well, he's never been an offensive line coach. He's never been the head guy at that position. And that's true. He has been a tight ends coach. So he has been a position coach in the league before, just not offensive line. And his background is offensive line.
Yeah, he was an assistant offensive line coach with some pretty good guys. And we had Eric Wood on the in the show last week, and he said, listen, he's handled a room full of offensive linemen. He's not intimidated by going in there with a bunch of 300-pounders.
And, I mean, I know he was the assistant offensive line coach in Indy this past year, but look at that group. I mean, they didn't let anybody touch Andrew Luck. What, did he get sacked once over the last 10 games?
Right.
Once.
That's right.
And they said, you know, they had the fewest sacks allowed in the league this year. And that was a unit that was a little touch and go at the beginning of the year. But you want to talk about progress and development, I think that is the main selling point for someone like Bobby Johnson, especially when he's replacing, you know, a coach in Juan Castillo who certainly has a ton of skins on the wall and a lot of respect across the league. But you look at the young players that had to be fit together here in Buffalo last year, and I think you look back on the season asking yourself, man, why wasn't there more progress from this guy? Or why didn't this guy take the next step with all the time he got on the field? And whether that's collectively as a unit or an individual guy, I just get the sense that the progress that was anticipated from young players never manifested itself with that group. And I think that's what maybe hurt, you know, Coach Castillo's tenure here more than anything else, you know, over this past year.
The more time you spend around pro athletics, you know that sometimes – it's not a personal beef. It's not something that anybody takes personally. But when you switch out one player for another player, or two players for another player, and certainly a position coach for another position coach, the change in chemistry is palpable. I don't think there's any question that the wide receiver room of the Buffalo Bills got more productive when they got less experienced late in the season, and it turned into a bunch of young kids trying to do it themselves with Robert Foster and Zay Jones, you know, kind of carrying the load along with the young kid who came in, the fast kid that came in. Robert Foster. Anyway. Isaiah McKenzie, who came in. And, you know, so they sprinkled a bunch of these young kids in and new guys in, and they kind of bonded together. It's a little bit addition by subtraction, and not taking anything away from the players they released, but the chemistry does change in the room. And that's what these coaches are going to be in charge of. You can get a spark and a raised level of production when you change leadership in the room, and when you change the players in the room, and the attitude changes and the dynamic changes, and things can get better. That's what coaches, that's what coaching staffs are supposed to be able to do, and that's what Sean McDermott is shuffling the deck and his coaching staff in order to accomplish. So it'll be interesting to see if it does happen.
Right, and you know, you look at what he said, what Brandon Bean said yesterday. Boy, is Brandon Bean happy he's not looking for a quarterback? Is he happy he's not looking for a quarterback this year?
We were talking about it. Well, we said it yesterday. Last year at the Senior Bowl, way different conversation than what's going on down there this year with the Bills staff that are there, correct? I mean, that's it's a whole different world at the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, in 2019 than it was in 2018.
I mean, how much of an exhale can you as a personnel boss take when not only do you have your starting quarterback, but you have entire quarterback room set before your scouting duties, you know, really kick into full gear? You've got to, I mean, just to be able to cross that off your list, I think it's a great thing to just leave on the back burner and not have to worry about, so you can focus on those other holes that do exist in glaring fashion in some cases on Buffalo's roster on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And we are a long way from where we were in 2018. So is Brandon Bean. Our guy John Murphy is in Mobile, Alabama. He had a chance to sit down one-on-one with the Bills general manager. McDermott. We're going to do the Sean McDermott sound instead of the Bean sound right now. So Murphy had a one-on-one with Sean McDermott, and we're going to go to that sound right now. We'll see how things have changed from 1 year.
All right, thanks, fellas. We're at Ladd People Stadium in Mobile, Alabama. We're between practices at the Senior Bowl, and I'm with Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Coach, who you got down here? You got some of your coaching staff and pretty much all your scouts here.
We do, yeah. We've got our coordinators here, and along with our offensive line coach, Bobby Johnson, newly hired a few days ago, and then we've got our scouts as well.
Tell me about some of these new coaches. Heath Farwell, special teams coordinator. What did you like about him that made you think you wanted to get him on your staff?
Yeah, young guy, certainly doesn't come with a ton of experience, but did play in the league for a number of years. Similar to Tasker in some ways in terms of a standout special teams player when he played, and just brings an energy and a youthful dynamic to our staff. Very hungry young man that seeks knowledge all over the place, and you talk to people, and he embraces that growth mindset that we embrace in Buffalo, I think he's poised to have a very bright future.
I was reading a story about him and his tenure at Carolina, when they talked about how he would wear cleats and gloves to practice with the special teamers. What's his thought there? What is he doing?
Yeah, I don't know. We may have to talk about that one a little bit. I've heard that as well. So, at the end of the day, I think the players will appreciate playing for a guy that, that's fun to play for in terms of his energy, his ability to relate to them at their level, being as how he played, and a guy that can be dynamic as we continue and he continues to develop.
Tell me about your new offensive line coach.
Yeah, Bobby Johnson was an assistant O-line coach with the Colts the previous season. He's been a tight ends coach in this league. He's been an assistant O-line coach. Never had the full unit himself. And so this will be his first opportunity at this level to do that, albeit he was an offensive line coach in college for a number of years. So another young coach, as it relates to this league, that is hungry, great fundamental and technique teacher, and a guy that's been around some good football over the course of his career.
I was wondering about that. For an offensive line coach, are you looking for a guy who would help younger players develop, or are you looking for a scheme guy to help you
Well, I think it comes down to philosophy, number one, with Coach Dable, that he matches philosophically what I and Coach Dable want to do, and then as far as scheme goes, but just as important, if not more important, honestly, Murph, is the fundamentals and the techniques and the rules that come down and are so important as it relates to good offensive line play.
And you're still in the market for a wide receivers coach. Do we assume there's somebody still active in the playoffs, or are you just doing interviews still?
Well, we're going through our due diligence on it and evaluating what might be out there, and there's certainly some good coaches still out there, and just want to get the right people on board. That's really where it starts. This thing is driven by people, and it's a player-driven league, but it's a people-driven league as well, so we got to get the right people on board.
I guess the assumption is from many Bills fans and observers is that offense will be your focus of attention personnel-wise this offseason. Is that fair to say?
In some ways. I mean, it's got to be an all-encompassing approach, though, to begin with, and we'll take it from there, but we're not just going to ignore good football players that may be on the defensive side of the ball. We still have some needs there as well. But yes, we are in the market to build an offense and do it the right way.
I was thinking about Coach Dable's 2018 season. He's kind of up against it when you think about four different quarterbacks and a wide receiver group that was kind of switched out during the course of a season. Almost like he never really got a chance maybe to put in place what you and he wanted to get in place for that offense.
Yeah, right. We didn't really and every year is different, right? Every year presents its own challenges, set of challenges, but we really didn't have the continuity that that we had hoped, and some of that came from the quarterback position, just because of Josh coming in young, rookie, and so it's important that we continue to build this team the right way, the roster the right way, and when we do that, you'll see an improvement in terms of as it relates to the offensive side of the ball.
There were several times last year when you would make mention of offensive line and maybe the inability to win battles up front. How important is that, and what can you look for in players here and through the course of this offseason that maybe gives you that?
Yeah, that's huge. You've got to be able to win up front on both sides of the ball. You've seen that so far in the playoffs. Certainly you need skill on the perimeter, and you've seen that as well, but I believe it really starts up front on both sides of the ball. Offensively, I didn't think we did. At times we did a good job, but not enough, and so we've got to develop consistency there, and it really starts with looking for guys with that can help us, whether it's through free agency or the draft. And we certainly have guys that we feel like on our roster right now can help us as they continue to grow and develop. And that's why you know, the staff and the move with the staff was so important for us.
The early assessment here in Mobile is that there's offensive line talent here, maybe interior guys. Do you notice that? Do you see that?
A little bit. You know, just our first practice being here, about to go through our second one here. So as we put today and tomorrow back to back, and we get a little bit better feel for the line, and today was no pad, so as they put on pads, we'll get an even better feel.
Draft versus free agency. What's the preferred way to build a roster?
Yeah, you'll hear me say 10 times out of 10 draft. If you want to grow your own, get them in-house, develop them, build a culture with your players that you draft, and then that way they can sell it and teach the players that come in next year's draft class. So that's what we'll be banking on to some extent with the previous draft class and the one before that, our first draft class. So you know, those guys know that they'll be given the responsibility to teach the new guys that come in this year, and so it's important that we go through our a good evaluation of the current draft class, as well as we look at who fits the Buffalo Bills the best.
Sean, I was right on my questions for you today, and I was thinking, this part, talent evaluation assessment, that's what, 1/5 of your job, 1/4 of your job, and it's the job. But really, you've got a lot more on the table than just assessing college seniors, don't you?
As it relates to right now, or
now it appears, but your whole job. I mean, this is just one aspect.
It is. It's one aspect, and so you know, as a head coach, you wear a couple different hats, and it's kind of relevant to what season we're in. And right now, it's trying to evaluate, but it's also trying to add it to our staff and the coaching staff. And look, you can have good players, but if you don't have the right staff, those players aren't going to develop or aren't going to be given the chance to become the best version of themselves. So having the right coaches on board that are good teachers, care about the players, that embody also what we're quite honestly looking for in players, guys that are smart, guys that are tough, willing to hold the players accountable and teach. At the end of the day, that's what we are as coaches. We're teachers and guys that can take what seemingly is complex and make it simple.
Last question. You sit here in the cold and the rain in Mobile, Alabama. What do you look for? What are you looking for when you watch these Senior Bowl practices?
A little bit of what we just talked about. I'm looking for guys that, receivers that can catch contested balls, offensive linemen that can win the one-on-one matchups. I mean, linebackers that play downhill the way we expect to play but can also cover in the pass game. Defensive backs that can break on the football. So we kind of have critical factors at every position that we look for. But that's our secret. I can't give that away right now, Murph.
Coach, thanks for this. Good luck.
Right, thanks, Murph.
Head Coach Sean McDermott. Fellas, we'll send it back to you in the studio in Orchard Park.
Thanks, Murph, along with Sean McDermott. What are your quick takeaways from what Sean McDermott said, not only about his staff, but also about the way they're evaluating the young players down there?
Well, if you have the philosophy that draft is the way you build your roster, and he said 10 times out of 10, that's going to be my answer, then you must have coaches who can develop them to get those young players to reach their full potential. If you don't have teaching coaches who can maximize the talent level, you're never going to get your team where you need it to be. And I think that's part of the reason why Coach felt it necessary to make the changes that he had to make to his coaching staff this offseason. He was not getting the progress in development from a large balance of the players at those various position groups to push this team to the next level in the win-loss column. And absent development, it doesn't matter what – he said it himself. You can have a talented team, But if you don't have the coaches that can develop that talent, maximize that talent, push that talent forward to a higher level of potential, your team is never going to realize or be anywhere close to the ultimate prize.
All right, we're going to take a break. That was John Murphy with Sean McDermott. We're going to have more from John Murphy live and a talk back in a moment. Chris Brown along with Steve Tasker here at One Bills Live. We're presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown and our man John Murphy down in Mobile, Alabama. In fact, we're going to go down to Mobile right now live with John Murphy, who has been hanging out around campus watching the North-South practices. And Murph, you're not going to get a chance to watch practice today. It's closed off, right?
Yeah, it's weird. There's a forecast for some pretty severe thunderstorms coming here through the Gulf Coast area of Mobile, Alabama. I haven't really seen them yet. We got a little rain, a little gusty winds, but I guess it still could happen. So late yesterday, the Senior Bowl organizers, in a preemptive strike, decided to move both practices today, the North practice and the South practice, move them indoors to the indoor practice facility at the University of South Alabama. Indoor facility, but not enough room for all the media. There's several hundred media here, and really not enough room for the teams. Typically, each of the 32 NFL teams will bring, you know, 10 or 15 scouts and coaches to the individual practices. Not today. The 32 teams have been told they're restricted to just two representatives from each team. That's all they can fit. Yeah, that's all they can fit in the interior facility at South Alabama. So they're going to have the practices. They're going to provide video to all these teams of what goes on at practices today. But really just two players, I believe. It'll probably be Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean who will go in and watch practice today. That should start in a couple of minutes here, actually, for the North team. The nighttime meetings still go on, still very important, obviously. The Bills have had about they have on the schedule about 20, 25 players coming in for nighttime meetings, and as we talked about, I think yesterday they're not extensive, but they're a little bit longer than they can do at the combine. And last night, as you heard Brandon Bean say when he talked to the media yesterday, last night's focus was on offensive linemen. I want to say they had 5 to 6 or 7 offensive linemen come in for the nighttime sessions they have. Very important. They talked about it yesterday. We wrote about it on BuffaloBills.com. Those meetings continue, but practice really restricted. Now, the weather forecast, the ones I've seen, say tomorrow should be fine, 55, 60 degrees and sunny. So practice expected to be reopened to the media and everybody else from these NFL teams coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, but Murph, that cannot sit very well with NFL teams only being able to send two representatives to practice. I mean, we hear all the time these personnel guys talk about how they like to be down on the field, see the interaction even between players in drills, who's lining up first, who's patting somebody on the back. There's a lot of give and take, that nonverbal communication even that they look for in their evaluation of a player. I mean, with two guys, you can't possibly do that.
You're right, Chris. In fact, Brandon Bean talked to us yesterday about that, about how much he relies on the on-field scouting staff they have down there to watch interpersonal interactions and watch how the players relate to their teammates on the field. That won't be going on very much at all, I wouldn't think, with just two players per team on the in the practice facility. I don't know what the options are. I mean, I don't know what it looks like over at University of South Alabama. I guess we have to rely on the Senior Bowl people to say there's just not enough room. And I just, Steve's heard me complain about weather forecasts for the last couple of weeks, mostly dealing with amounts of snow up at home. I haven't seen much rain here, to be honest with you. It's a little breezy, but it's just kind of a sprinkly rain. Maybe it's coming. Steve, you know how I feel about the weather forecasts and preemptive weather forecasts that shut things down. We got another one down here. I can't escape it, Steve.
It follows you around, Murph. You're like the kid in Charlie Brown. You're a pig pen. It follows you. The dark clouds follow you wherever you go. Tell me about
That's
this.
Right.
You got a chance to watch yesterday's practice, so it was outside. It was a normal practice.
Yeah, South team practice.
Yeah, the South team. What jumped out at you? Anybody or any particular or anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were a lot. I did see the South. I had to go do the stuff with Bean and McDermott after that and then kind of package that up for the website. But I did see the South, watched it pretty closely, I think. And it was, to be honest with you, it was cold yesterday, too. It was cold and breezy, but we hung in there. And it was interesting. It was good to watch practice again, to be honest. The standout, I think, the number one honest-to-goodness standout of the whole thing was Montez Sweat. He's a defensive end from Mississippi State, 6'6", 252 pounds. He was outstanding. Edge rusher. Sound like something the Bills might need? He was fantastic. He is, as I said, 6'6". He's really long. Long legs, long arms. He's very quick for a big man, too. I watched him in one-on-one drills just
knock over an offensive lineman, Titus Howard, just knocked him flat on his back. And I watched him do that a couple times. He was unstoppable. Montez Sweat is his name, a guy to watch in the game if you're watching on Saturday or even when the NFL Network resumes its practice video. He's got length. He's got quickness. He's dominant. He was dominant yesterday. I was reading about him more today. CBSSports.com said the most dominant player on the field yesterday. I'll go along with that. There was speculation that Montez Sweat might be a late first-rounder. Same article in CBSSports.com said now maybe you look for him in the top 10. Oh, by the way, the local team has the number 9 pick overall, and they are said to be interested. I think they're interested in talking with Montez Sweat. He was outstanding yesterday. There was another defensive end that caught my eye, Jalen Ferguson from Louisiana Tech. He looked pretty good. Obviously, we know the Bills are looking for offensive lineman too. To my eye yesterday, my untrained eye, best offensive lineman on the field was tackle Andre Dillard, who was from Washington State. There was some pretty good play from a guy named Elton Jenkins, a center from Mississippi State. He looked pretty good. And, of course, Bill's interested in wide receivers, right? One of the bigger name wide receivers here, just because of his college status, is Hunter Renfrew, who played at Clemson. Looked quick, looked like he had good hands. Looked to me like he might fit in as a slot receiver in the NFL. Not a physical specimen. You know, you think about Julian Edelman, for instance, and all he can do for the Patriots as a slot receiver. This guy doesn't look, he doesn't have the same physical makeup. So I would wonder about that a little bit, but he's certainly quick and good hands. Another wide receiver that caught my attention was a guy named Deebo Samuel from South Carolina. He looked really good to me. Made a couple of good catches downfield. 5'11", 216 pounds. And you know what? He's thick. Legs and butt, he's thick. You look at him and you say, that guy's a running back. Nope. He's a wide receiver and a pretty productive one in South Carolina. Looked like he was running great routes yesterday. Everything's pretty much simplified and boiled down here. Caught the ball and really ran well after the catch. I thought Deebo Samuel ran well after the catch. I know he's a guy that the Bills are somewhat interested in, and they're getting an eyeful, at least from yesterday's practice, Deebo Samuel. The UB guys, kept an eye on them in the South practice yesterday. Anthony Johnson, the wide receiver from Buffalo, University at Buffalo. Unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to do much. I think they threw to him once. It looked like he dropped that pass. He was never from maybe one snap that he got with his college teammate, Tyree Jackson. But other than that, they didn't put those two out there together with the same group. And it's just the first practice day, obviously. But Anthony Johnson didn't really jump out or do much of anything. As I said, I think he had one drop on the one pass thrown to him. And Tyree Jackson, his teammate, I mean, the size is what gets your attention, right? We talked about it yesterday. He stands on the podium for the weigh-ins yesterday, and in the room, everybody's like, whoa. I mean, 6'7", obviously, he gets your attention. He looked like a good athlete. A little bit clunky, I thought, you know, especially in his dropbacks. You know, you'd like to see a smooth dropback. Most of these quarterbacks, including Anthony Johnson, have not played and taken snaps under center very often in their collegiate career, and it looked that way with Anthony Johnson. In fact, at one point, they took all four quarterbacks from the South squad over to the side and just worked on dropbacks, snaps and dropbacks. And it looks like Anthony Johnson's going to or Tyree Jackson's going to need some work on that, I think, based on just sort of, it's just not a real smooth athletic dropback, kind of clunky, and he's 6'7". You know, he's going to look pretty clunky. They got into teamwork, though, and Tyree Jackson did a pretty good job. I think he got better as practice went along. He had one play, a roll to his left, and going against his body and fired an absolute strike about 20 yards downfield to Hunter Renfrew, the Clemson wide receiver we talked about. Got about 20 yards on that play. I thought it was the best play of the day, to be honest with you, for Tyree Jackson. And he did show progress, I thought, during the course of the workout. So I think that's a good sign moving forward for the rest of this week. A guy that size is going to get attention. And you know how they are with quarterbacks, right, in this league. He'll be bumped up. I mean, they talked about him. Jim Nagy talked about Tyree Jackson as a third or fourth rounder. Well, after a week here, I wouldn't be surprised if people talk about him as a second or third rounder. His stock will go up the closer we get to the draft. So those are some of my initial impressions just watching the South practice yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Samuel, Murph, because as much as, you know, the Bills are perceived to really need to upgrade their wide receiver position, they also never really found a kick returner last year. And Samuel's a guy that has kick return experience. There's a guy on the North squad also, the running back out of Memphis, Tony Pollard, is a super accomplished return man as well. So there's some interesting return candidates in the pool down there, and I know Samuel is certainly in that class because you look at his touchdowns over the course of his South Carolina career. He had 15 in his career, but he had 7 rushing, 5 receiving, and 3 on kickoff return. I mean, I would think that that's a versatile kind of talent that the Bills would absolutely be interested in.
Yeah, versatility, I think, is the key, too. You're right about that, Chris. And, you know, I was thinking about it. When you look at, you know, the Bills need receivers, we know that. And I think many of us, me included, tend to look at it like, okay, they need one speed guy, they need one red zone guy, they need one possession guy. You know what? they need a versatile guy who can do a little bit of everything, I think. They need him, right? And Deebo Samuel, to me, looks like that type of guy, maybe. I'm not saying he's a first-rounder or a first-round talent, but he certainly has, like, an interesting body type, you know, as thick as he is, especially below the waist, very thick player, and a guy who might be able to handle return work, as you said. He's done it in the past, obviously, and a guy who can be kind of an all-round receiver. Who wouldn't need one of those? I'm not talking about first-round talent here, but I'm talking about a guy that might interest the Buffalo Bills just because of his versatility and the fact that he looks like kind of an all-purpose wide receiver. We'll see.
Well, Murph, you're down there evaluating all these guys. You're not going to get a chance to watch practice today, but you are going to get a chance to talk to some people. You're going to talk to Heath Farwell. You're going to get a chance to talk to Brandon Bean. Yep. We've already heard your interview with Sean McDermott. Also, Joe Shane and Dan Morgan. You going to get a chance to talk to those guys? I know they're going to be with a scrum media. Are you going to get a chance to one-on-one with those guys at all?
Yeah, that's the plan, to talk to those two. We haven't really spent a lot of time with them. We had Dan Morgan on. I think you and I talked to him when he first got hired, right, Steve. But we'll talk to those guys and have those interviews for you tomorrow. I thought McDermott was interesting yesterday, and the Bills, obviously, I'm interested in your guys' take on this. The Bills have the vacancy at wide receiver, and in the scrum, and I think it was in the scrum yesterday, McDermott talked about offensive assistant Chad Hall, who spent the last 2 years with the Buffalo Bills, and he mentioned him, I think, right, unless I misheard it, as a possible candidate for the wide receiver vacancy. Hall played, of course, been with the Bills for 2 years as an offensive assistant, played in the NFL for a couple of years with the Eagles, the Niners, and Kansas City, played at Air Force Academy, actually served a 2 or 3 year stint in the Air Force as a second lieutenant. I know they like him a lot. They like what he's done with the offense, and McDermott pretty much said yesterday, praised him, said he's done a great job, and kind of left him in the mix as a possible wide receiver candidate. I thought that was interesting yesterday. Brandon Bean, you'll hear from him later on. We talked to him at the scrum, and then certainly in the one-on-one interview that's coming up later in the show. Very strong affirmation, I thought, yesterday from Brandon Bean about the fact that he thinks the draft is the key. The draft is vital, not free agency. And we know the Bills have all that money to spend in free agency. They have those 10 draft picks. But he says in the draft you have control. You're not competing with talent for somebody else. In the draft you have control, and that's why he likes the draft. And he also, and a lot of people picked up on this from Brandon Bean meeting with the rest of the media and us there yesterday, about what a different feel this is for the Bills, knowing that their quarterback questions are at least for now settled and answered. Yeah. They don't come here, you know, agonizing over every single quarterback snap. There was a lot of pressure on Brandon Bean last year, and it almost not revealed until yesterday how much he felt it yesterday here at the Senior Bowl, watching these candidates, including Josh Allen, the guy they eventually picked. That's gone now. And Brandon Bean, if anything, sounded to me yesterday relieved and challenged by what faces him, knowing all the holes he has to fill, knowing all the assets he has in terms of draft picks and obviously cap money to spend. He feels challenged to fill the rest of these holes in, especially now while he's got that quarterback under contract at a good rookie quarterback level.
Well, all right, Murtha, we appreciate you doing yeoman's work down there, hounding these guys, getting some one-on-ones. We appreciate the interviews. Good luck. And have you gotten to any good restaurants? Probably not, though, right? You probably haven't gone out to...
Of course. Come on.
Not really. No, we haven't. I mean, I got done working. I was trying to keep up with the Michigan game last night, the basketball game, yeah, and write articles. And all of a sudden, I look up, it's 9 o'clock, and that was the end of dinner. I'll tell you what, our guys, our crew are really working hard. Those guys have, they've been working until 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I think, yep, they put in a 17-hour day yesterday down here. Mike Adamack and Kevin Cargis, thank you very much, and Simon Tuckey. They put in a long day yesterday. I'm putting in a plug for them because they're going to want some time off when we get back.
All right, no time off for you. You guys keep your nose to the grindstone down there.
No days off.
No days off for you. Thanks, Murph. We'll talk to you later in the show and appreciate all the work you're doing down there.
Thank you.
Much more to come. We've got Andrew Brandt coming. We've got more one-on-ones with Murph down from Mobile, Alabama. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to One Bills Live. I was waiting for the... Wasn't I going to do an update here? This is not the update music.
No, not yet.
Not the update music?
That's top of the hour, Steve. You're ahead of the game.
I got ahead of the game here. I'm holding the update in my hand. I'm way ahead of the game. That's what happens when you get beside yourself. This just in. We just talked to Murph, who's down at the Senior Bowl, and he's, you know, they're looking at their draft class, right? So you and I were talking about this, and the expectations are always sky high at this time of year about their draft class. Right. You're going to get a guy.
Got to nail your draft class.
That's right. Now, this kind of flies in the face of that, and there are reasons for it. And you were telling me even so between this. This just came out off Twitter. Rams and Patriots had the fewest and second fewest snaps played from their rookie classes in the NFL this year, respectively. Something to remember come April's draft. The Rams and the Patriots in the Super Bowl had the fewest contributions from their rookie class in the NFL.
Right. Part of the reason for that, though, is because players they drafted in previous years are the ones holding down the starting roles, some of the most important roles, whether it's Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, Cameron Jordan, Michael Thomas, Marcus Lattimore.
Well, those guys are – that's the Saints. We're talking about the Rams-Patriots.
Oh, Rams. Okay.
Rams-Patriots in the Super
Aaron
Bowl.
Aaron Donald. Okay.
Now, and Dominican Sue, free agent. Marcus Peters, free agent.
Yeah, they did a few more trades.
Aqib Talib,
Brandon Cooks on a
agent.
Trade.
Yeah. Now, they do have Jared Goff.
Jared Goff.
Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley. Let's see. Who else do they have? The tight end, I think, Higbee, they drafted.
Yeah, so they got some guys,
but not nearly as many.
Right,
and it's because those two teams have chosen to shape their rosters a little bit differently. There has been a greater proliferation of trades in recent years
with this
new wave of GMs in the league. The GMs in the league kind of had a degree of turnover over the last 4 or 5 years, where you have younger guys sitting in those seats now, and they have been far more apt to execute trades, due in part to the fact that the salary cap isn't nearly the issue that it used to be, in the previous 10 years, when you could get into cap jail pretty quickly and making trades and the cap implications therein were too cost prohibitive to make a trade.
Yeah, when you got
those are kind of out the window now, and so it's kind of freed up and provided a different avenue for you to change the dynamics of your roster, and more teams are apt to trade, especially teams that are in a quote-unquote go-for-it year. The Patriots are in that kind of mode almost every year, and we saw what they did, doing the trade to acquire Josh Gordon, which ultimately did not pan out
trading,
as he ran into more
problems.
They're
trading sixth-round picks, fifth-round picks,
the Patriots traded Brandon Cooks to the Rams.
Right. And yeah, exactly.
and
also the strange thing about it also is you got a lot of teams. If you go to some of the websites, it'll tell you. You got a ton of teams that have got a ton of cap space this next year. The Colts, the Jets, the Bills head the list. There's more than a handful of teams with a ton of money to spend, which leaves them room to trade. They're getting all this money off of their books.
Right.
Some of it has to do with coaching changes, regime changes, where they clear the decks of guys who are overpaid or not living up to the value of their contracts. That does clear the decks so these teams can make trades.
And with
economically.
And with the free agent pool, at least the perception is, the free agent pool isn't super deep at several positions, including some of the need positions for the Bills. And the fact that that if you do try to acquire one of those players, you're going to, in all likelihood, overpay, it might behoove you as a GM instead to try to negotiate a trade for a player who's under contract already and not being paid an exorbitant price for their services. I mean, you might find a more cost-effective way of improving your roster via trade than in free agency, where in all likelihood you're going to overpay for a player because there's competition for that player.
Right.
Where if you're executing a trade with a team, it's just you and that other team, unless somebody else wants to jump in.
All right, coming up more at the top of the hour, Andrew Brand, who's coming on, the Monday Morning Quarterback Weekly columnist. He's a host of the Business Report podcast and the director of the Morad Center for Sports Law at Villanova. Coming up, you're listening to One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.